We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
We're here.
I wish I could give this feeling. I wish I could give this feeling.
Hey everyone, we're pumped to be able to share an exclusive trailer with you after the show. From Blue Wire Studios comes Golden Goal Stories of Soccer Legends. Narrated by fellow Blue Wire host Brandon Kelly, each Monday two new episodes will take a look at some of soccer's biggest stars and the moments that define their careers.
From Haaland, Zlatan, Messi, Rapinoe, and many more, each episode will focus on historical plays and personalities that make the sport great. So stay tuned after the episode and listen to the Golden Goal Stories of Soccer Legends wherever you get your podcast. What up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Corner Podcast. Kel Dansby here with the old man, Andreas Hale. Another week of boxing and MMA to talk about. Not really a lot of boxing, let's just be honest. It's a week dominated by the UFC. They have UFC 251 on Fight Island, aka Yas Island, this week. And then also another card on Wednesday with a title fight. So it's a nice little bit of stacked MMA action for us. Coming to us from Abu Dhabi, we'll talk about both of those cards in a little while. But first, we have to touch on something else in the UFC, which is Mike Perry and why people giving him a pass stops now. So that's going to be like the first MMA thing we touch on here in a second. First, Dre, it's been a couple days since we've been on the podcast. How is everything in Vegas? I had a friend in Vegas test positive for the Rona. He is going through it right now. We are the same age, so it's not like he's old, and it is kicking his ass. He's going to pull through, but he says like the worst cold flu he's ever gotten. So how is everyone with you? Is everything good? Is everyone safe?
Yeah, I mean, it's hot as shit out here. It's
what is it today? Hold on, let me look.
It's not Fight Island hot.
No. We'll talk about that in a second, how hot and ridiculous it is and how that's going to be a detriment to a certain fighter on the card. But everybody's cool, man. I mean, my brother-in-law just flew back home to Florida. I told his ass, don't you go outside, don't do nothing, because it's crazy out there. But nobody, as far as I know, is tested positive. But it's wild because, like, I keep telling people, it's like, it ain't about you. I just don't want to get sick. I know everybody keeps talking about dying, but I don't want to get sick. And like my wife, you know, she works at a court, and the room next to her, three people tested positive. So it's crazy that it's surging. But like I keep saying, it's not until the right person dies is when they'll feel like they need to start shutting things down again. But for me, I'm shut down. I'm still not doing anything. Like, I ate out once. I know people have listened. I keep saying, like, I didn't eat any takeout. But for Father's Day, I had Maggiano's. So that was the only time that I ate food outside of this house. So I'm going to go back to that. You know, I'm not taking any wild risks and going out into the public and getting sick because I don't want to get sick. And I damn sure don't want to get my daughter sick. So I'm good. What about you?
Yeah, man, I'm good. Still here in the crib, making sure that I'm taking no, you know, extra risk. I'm going to get my second COVID test tomorrow. Well, I'm scheduling it tomorrow to have it on Sunday because I'm flying to Puerto Rico on Wednesday to see my grandparents and spend 3 weeks out there. And they're opening Puerto Rico back up on the 15th, the day that I get there. But you have to have a negative COVID test as soon as you touch down for you to do anything. So I have one already, but it has to be within 72 hours. So I have to go and take another one, which, you know what, not that big of a inconvenience. Like, cool, I get to go back. I get to hang out with my grandparents, make sure they're safe, go around the island, you know, still wear the mask, still take precautions, but be able to go out to the beach, social distance, and just enjoy. I always love going back to Puerto Rico. Like, you get that feeling. I don't know if this ever happens to you, but like, when you go somewhere and you haven't been there for a while and you step off and you just get this feeling like it's home, or like you, and I've never lived in Puerto Rico. I went there all the time as a kid, every summer for vacation and stuff, but I just step off and it just feels right to me. It's like, oh, I feel great, something about the island. So it's good to be able to go back, take my wife. She has never been there. It was funny. She asked me, she was like, oh, when did you take, you know, your ex-wife there? We always say, like, the kid's mom. So she was like, when did you take the kid's mom there? I was like, she never came with me. She was like, but the kids went with you, like, four times. I was like, yes. She never went to Puerto Rico with me. So it's no surprise I got divorced the first go-around. Like, she has never done anything like that with me. So it's cool to take my wife, and she gets to experience, you know, my family and just everything that is Puerto Rico. They have a beach that glows bright blue and green at night. So we're going to go there, chill, see some wild shit. Yeah, man. Got to take advantage of this COVID time.
Yeah, I'm not taking advantage of it. I wish I could, but I'm way too paranoid, so.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, listen, I'm not leaving the crib that much. I'm just quarantining in a much more beautiful place than Hartford, Connecticut. So, yeah. You know, just being in the crib in Hartford, Connecticut for long periods of time, it really doesn't compare to being in a crib in Puerto Rico for long periods of time. So that is my goal, is to go chill with the grandparents, stay inside, don't have to worry about, you know, fast food or eating out because it's Puerto Rico. My grandma will cook or she'll make me cook. So it's going to be real fun to do that. So in the meantime, counting down the days, you know, covering boxing every Tuesday and Thursday, ESPN, shameless plug. And yeah, that's it, man. Just chilling and trying to stay sane in the realm that is Twitter and social media nowadays. Because it feels like every day something comes out that pisses me off. And it does. It is weird. I'm not even that guy. Like, I'm a happy guy. I'm Mr. Positive on this show and in real life. But every day it seems like there's something new that just pisses me off. Whether it's a Trump tweet, like, you know, trying to make, who was it, Bubba Watson apologize?
Yep.
For seeing a noose? Like, no, everyone saw the noose. They sent out pictures. It was a noose. Like, it's ridiculous. So whether it's something like that or, you know, something like we see now in the grand scope of things with Mike Perry, when he, you know, duffed out an old man on video and dropped the N-word like six times. Just casually, and we'll dive into that more in depth here in a second, but it got me thinking, like, this is an open space, we have real ass conversations here. When is it that you stop using the N-word? Like, yo, you know what, fuck it, it's unnecessary now. Because a lot of us growing up, it's just, we listen to hip-hop, we're, you know, hip-hop kid generation, like, it just, it was what it was. But when did it just hit you, be like, yeah, I'm not gonna use this anymore, like, I really don't gotta say.
It was, I don't know, I can't pinpoint the exact day, but I know I had this conversation with my wife some years ago where, pop the claw.
Yes,
correct. She said we should probably stop using it. And I know for me, you know, it's low on the totem pole of things to do to get rid of, right? In terms of black people using the N-word. But That being said, the fact that it's been so rampantly used by non-black people has always bothered me. And I don't want anybody to ever feel comfortable using it in my presence, so instead, I just eliminated it from my vocabulary. Like, I used to say it all the time. And then I started just seeing people and younger people just using the word, and I was like, eh. It's like, you know, when you make a conscious decision to stop cursing, you know, I still curse, but, you know, I don't want to curse around my daughter.
Yeah.
So I made a conscious decision because I don't want her picking up on her or her being confused to figure out, like, well, daddy says it, so it must be okay. So I don't want that to be the same thing with non-black people saying, well, Andrea says it, so it's okay. No, it's not okay. So it's easier for me to just eliminate the word from my vocabulary because, like, honestly, for me, what good is it? I can find other words to use. So I just took it out. And I don't know the exact day, but it was weird because I remember I kept slipping and saying it, and I was like, you know what? This ain't that hard. I'm just going to stop using it. But I know it was like one time I was out. I don't know if it was a concert. I don't know where I was. And like I overheard a bunch of white kids saying it. And I was like, ew. Like it made me feel so disgusting. And I was like, well, I don't want them to ever feel comfortable. And they weren't near me. They were within an earshot, but I was like, in order for me to start checking people on using this, if I want to, I might as well take it out of my vocabulary. So from that point, I just don't use it. But to be clear, if black people use it, I don't get all upset and be like, yo, you need to take that out. I don't do that. It was a decision I made myself. So what about you? When did you decide to stop using the N-word? Because I don't think I've ever heard you say it.
Yeah. No, I mean, I haven't said it, bro. I don't know if I've said it since maybe I was like 16. Like really said it, really used it. It's never been my thing. It's never been something I had to say. I don't know. In high school, my group was very diverse, right? Like, in high school, my group was, like, Asian, white, Spanish, a little bit of everything. So I never said it in, quote-unquote, mixed company because you don't want to give other people the license to say it, right? Like, you don't want that to be an uncomfortable thing. So I never said it. I was always in mixed company. When I was with my cousins or my friends, maybe. Like, I'll say it in rap lyrics. That's the only way I say it. But in conversation, it never was something I said. And I remember the exact moment was because I was 15, was in New York for the summer, chilling. I think I went back to New York this summer, and I still speak how I speak now, but I remember I went back and being in Vegas, like, you know, you pick up little Vegas shit, and I was saying hella.
Yeah,
and anyone who's been to Vegas, like, the joke is hella, oh my god, hella Vegas kids say hella. So for like that summer, I was saying hella, and people were like, yo, you're talking like a white kid, like a surfer kid or like a skateboarding kid. I was like, yo, I didn't even know I said hella that much. And then I started paying attention to like what people said, one, so I could eliminate hella. But I was like chilling on the block, and like these girls came through, and it was this fly Spanish chick. She looked like the light-skinned chick from 3LW. I forgot, Adrian Balon.
Oh.
I remember when I was 15, I was like, yo, she looks crazy. I was like, yo, she looks like the 3LW girl. So for like those 2 days, I was like, yo, she's bad. Like, so I was eyeing her, and I remember she just said it constantly. Like, just constantly, just N-words flying, constantly, constantly, constantly. And anyone who's never been to New York, like, Spanish people use it all the time in New York. So it wasn't that she was Spanish and saying that bothered me. It was just something that it sounded real ugly coming from such a pretty girl's mouth. And I was like, if I say it, like, do people look at me like this? And that perception stuck with me. So it's not something I've ever said. And I was 15 because I just remember it just made her look real ugly. Like, she thought she was dope and fly and being, like, the cute hood girl. And she had the hoops and she was cute, but that just made her just be mad ugly to me. And, I mean, there's other things. Like, I can't stand when women smoke weed. I mean, I don't smoke anything. I've never smoked anything outside of a hookah a couple times. That makes me sick. Nonetheless, I don't smoke. I've never tried smoking. Like, it's just not my thing. But when girls, like, smoke a blunt or something, and they think that shit's mad cool. Like, even Rihanna, like, with her sexy ass. Like, I can't. Like, it's not sexy to me when they smoke a blunt and, like, how it smells and all this shit. Like, that's a dude-looking thing to me. Like, you can't be sexy smoking a blunt. Like, that shit's just not cute to me. So, like, that I don't like. It fell into, like, one of those things. Like, there's a few things where pretty girls do and it annoys me. Like, smoking cigarettes, smoking a blunt, saying the N-word. It was just like, damn, you were cute, ma, until you said that. And then it just, you know, ruined it for me. So, like most things in my life growing up, I learned my lesson through a woman. I was, you know, had a crush on this chick. She said it, that she was ugly. I never said it again. And it comes to the point of, it's crazy that on the flip side of things, you see, I mean, we all played online gaming, play Call of Duty to this day. I grew up on Halo. There's little white kids that couldn't wait to say that shit. You have the Mike Perrys of the world where I feel like it gives them, I don't know, it gives them like this energy. Like they feel like a superhero when they say that shit. Because it's so taboo. And they're like, oh, look, I'm so different, I can say it. And they're just blah, blah, blah. It's like, it's cooler to them than it is to any black person I know. And that's wild. Like, they don't, I believe a lot of people don't think of it in the terms of racism. They're not trying to be racist, whatever. But they think that shit is cool. And most black people I do that know that say it, just say it. It'd be like, yo, if you never had to say this, would you be okay? Yeah, because it's just not cool. It's just something black people do. But yeah, the white people say it, it seems like such a cool thing to them.
Well, see, it's for me, it's been normalized, right? It's to the point where the word is so commonly used for the youth is that they don't disseminate whether it's, you know, a derogatory term towards black people or just something cool people say to each other. So that was always my breaking point, because once you forget where the word came from, and it's real. Like, have you ever tried to explain it to somebody who was like young and dumb? And like, if you try to explain it and then you listen to yourself to explain it, you sound stupid. It really is difficult to say, well, you know, it's our word, we use it because we own the word, we took a negative and turned it into a positive, but if you modify it with the ER, that's when it's wrong, but with an A, it's okay, but you still can't say it. But, you know, then you have to justify people like Mike Perry. Well, why can't he say it? Well, because he's not black. Well, what about, then you start going down the line of color. Well, like Fat Joe says it, well, he's Puerto Rican. Well, he's not black. Well, he's like really light. And you go down this rabbit hole of shit, and I'm just like, you know what? I commend people that can make that argument, but it, for me, I just can't. I can't make an argument where I go back when I'm done making that having that conversation and be like, I feel good about this conversation. I really got through to that person. Instead, I just eliminate the word and be like, no, yeah, I'm not just going to use it at all, because I don't want any of you to be confused. And the like I said all the time with like the word coon and Uncle Tom in classic, when you start using the shit too much, it takes away what it really means. And now, like, everybody's saying, calling everybody a coon and Uncle Tom. Shit, I got called Uncle Tom the other day because I defended a white dude. It was crazy. He didn't even call me Uncle Tom. He said I was tap dancing. And I was like, yo, what? A, you don't know me. And the reason why I said this, to put it in the context of things, is Russ Bensington, who was the editor at Slam. When I worked at AOL, he was one of my writers. But he's an amazing writer. He's an older white dude. He's got his beard, but he's always been, you know, he's always documented the culture with respect. And he had a comment, which is not on our rundown. I don't know if we feel like talking about this or not. He had a comment on the Drake Pusha T thing, with Pusha having that song on Pop Smoke's unreleased record. And he made a comment about Pusha still going at Drake. And somebody was like, oh, you white dudes, like, you don't know shit about the culture, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, yo, I know Russ. Like, a comment about a Pusha T Drake beef, you don't have to be black to have that conversation. You don't. Because this is not a black and white conversation. It's a hip-hop conversation. And if you know the culture, you're allowed to say that. And he was like, ah, you tap dancing for Russ. What? That's what I'm talking about. Completely takes away the meaning of the word. So, with the N-word, nah, man, I just I don't use it, and I don't like seeing other people use it, and I especially don't like it when I see young kids use it, because they're a lot of them are absolutely clueless. Absolutely clueless. They have no idea the meaning of the word. Not a clue. They just think it's cool.
Yep, at all. Like, it's... I mention it all the time. It's like the chick on Mean Girls trying to get fetch to catch on. Like, yeah. To them, it's just another word. It's like, my kids say bruh all the time. Oh. And I'm just like, yo, what are you guys always saying bruh for? I just let them rock, but I can give them shit for it. But, you know, for a whole generation of kids, you know, white kids, Spanish kid, like, it's just their thing to say. I'd argue today, I hear more white people and Spanish people use it than I hear black people use it.
Yeah. It's, like I said, it's crazy. Like, dude, it's, like you say, bro, like, my niece is 10, and she said bro to me one day, and almost ripped her head off. She's like, oh, come on, bro. And I was like, excuse me? Yeah. Like, don't address me like that. And why are you
saying bro? Like, I'm not your bro.
I'm not your bro. Like, don't. Just don't do it. But, yeah. Things like that, it just get normalized in conversation.
Yep. It took me 3 days this summer to feel like a super old man because my kids said, bruh. I was like, yo, I'm not your bruh. And they were just like, okay, dad. I was like, yep.
Yes, daddy shit.
Like, I don't play that shit.
Yep.
So I'm super, yeah, I'm super old school when it comes to that. Like, I don't think my kids have called me my real name in their life. They've never said anything besides dad. They know my real name, obviously, because of journalism. But they don't ever say my real name. They still, to this day, call my wife Miss Elena. Because when they met, they were taught when you meet somebody, it is Miss first name. You don't call grown-ass people by their first name. Or Miss last name. If they old enough. I was like, yo, there's, like, if they your grandma's friends and my grandma's friends, they are Miss last name. If they are of my age, they are Miss first name, and then you got your aunts and uncles who are like my close friends.
Fair enough.
But outside of that, yeah, my kids don't play that shit. I forgot. I think it was my aunt. My aunt who lived in California for quite some time, so don't judge me by this woman. I love her with my heart. But my two little cousins call her Kawana. Like, they call her by her first name and call their daddy Corey. And I just stand there in amazement.
Yeah, I would too.
I was like, oof, this shit's too progressive for me. Just, no way, no how. Not in this house. Shit. Now, let's talk about Mike Perry specifically then. So, the video comes out, and pretty much he punches the old man in the face. Old man did kind of rush him. I don't care. It's an older gentleman. Not old. Like 55. 60. He can defend himself, but not against Mike Perry. And then it comes out in the report today, arrest report, that he also may have hit a friend of his girlfriend's, who happens to be a woman, in his fit of rage when they was trying to hold him back. And then during this tirade, at the end of the video, you just hear him drop in N-bomb after N-bomb after N-bomb. And it came to the point where this is being reported in MMA circles, and we reported it on ESPN. And this came out last night, and I see the headline for the .com article, and then I check social, and social uses a similar headline saying Mike Perry caught on camera hitting older man or some shit. And immediately I send out this email, and I hit up, you know, my manager in charge of combat sports socially, and I was just like, yo, this isn't okay. We can't just focus on him hitting the man. At this point, him using the N-word is as egregious as him hitting an old dude, if not more. I was like, we can't continue to ignore this, even though the UFC does. Even if this is not a problem for them, this is, one, a problem for me. And us not putting this in a headline is running from it, and we are enabling him. And shout out to the people I work with. They said, oh shit, I didn't notice. And a lot of times it isn't. You know, it is a case of, oh, I didn't notice. But guess what? You gonna know, you gonna learn today. I'm the only black person in the combat sports department. All three sports. pro wrestling, MMA, boxing, ESPN.com, social. I would say on air, but DC counts as on air. So he's a fighter too, though. Outside of that, I'm the only black person. No, y'all gonna hear me. And credit to them, they changed it. Within 20 minutes of my email, it was changed on all platforms, and every show on air today discussing it made it a point to point out his use of the N-word and saying racial slurs. So it feels good to be at a place where you know people are going to have your back. ESPN definitely had my back in that situation, and I think it's safe to say I can now voice my opinion, especially if I run into Mike Perry and I see Mike Perry, that I could walk up and, you know, if shit hits the fan or if we're talking and, you know, something gets loud or I decide to pop off, then I understand now I got a basis. They understand where I'm coming from because, yeah, enough is enough. This shit ain't cool no more. And it's time that someone said it at a large platform.
Well, first of all, I mean, kudos to you. And this is everything that I keep saying, is that you need a black person in the room to say, nope, that ain't it. You were that black person. So, and it's necessary, man, because we don't have enough black people. And I don't know if anybody saw that tweet went out, and I retweeted it, and I think a few other people talked about the amount of white people who are in editorial positions, either reporting, editing, in media, and it's like 86% white in MLB. It's probably higher in baseball, NBA, NFL. And I asked somebody to find out about combat sports, because I'm sure it's even more white people and less black people in editorial and high-ranking positions to say that this is ridiculous. So kudos to you for doing that, because you didn't have to. There could have been backlash, and good thing that the people at your company, at ESPN, recognize that there's a blind spot and something that they missed. Mike Perry, though. I mean, fuck. I don't know what else to say about this guy. I've said it a million times. His liberal use of the N-word is problematic, and something needs to be done about it. Now, the UFC just released a statement as we're recording this, basically giving us a bunch of lip service and bullshit. And I'm going to actually pull this up right now, because I need to read it verbatim for those of you that may end up missing this. The statement says as follows. UFC is aware and troubled by the video that was released last night concerning Mike Perry. The conduct displayed by Perry is not reflective of that of our organization. Perry apologized for his behavior and acknowledged he was disappointed with himself that his actions may have reflected poorly on the UFC. He further acknowledged that he believes he has some issues related to alcohol abuse and has informed UFC that he has committed to immediately seek professional treatment, including substance and behavior counseling. At this time, the UFC has informed Perry that he will not be offered a bout, and the parties have agreed to evaluate next steps for Perry following the completion of his treatment program. I just dropped my phone. What behavior are they addressing here? Him punching an old man? That's one thing you can address. But the ongoing behavior of him saying the N-word repeatedly, especially in the racial climate that we're in right now, needs to be addressed by the UFC. There is no amount of alcohol that allows you to relentlessly and carelessly use the N-word as repeatedly as Mike Perry does. The UFC needs to address this, because I guarantee you that if this was anti-Semitism that Deshaun Jackson and somehow Steven Jackson got himself involved in, that this happened in the UFC, or some anti-white shit, they would address that head on. There's just no way that you can allow this to continue to happen on your watch. And now it seems like the only thing that you're addressing is that he punched somebody. That is wrong. I'm not taking anything away from that. But this N-word stuff is a behavior issue as well. And it's something that you have been aware of for the longest time. So, MMA media, my white friends in MMA media, maybe you're not reporting this, but maybe you need to stop not reporting this. Look, I've already said my piece. Like, when it comes to Mike Perry, like, I don't think I can be in the same room interviewing this dude, because it might be a fight. Because I don't think he'll rationally listen to me.
Oh, that's good. There ain't no fair one, so it's all right.
So, I hope that a lot of you, if you listen to this podcast, take it upon yourselves when you notice somebody doing something like Mike Perry egregiously and repeatedly does, that you write something about it. Don't let it slide. Challenge him. And if you don't want to challenge it, at least write about it so we know it exists. Because too many people turn a blind eye and ear to this. Like, this was ridiculous because there was not even a black person in the room and he was just dropping the N-word. And it's like, come on, dude. Like, this is, I don't even, this, incomprehensible. Why are you doing this? He's got problems. He's not headed towards a path of where he'll be this, like, great individual once he's done fighting. He's one of those people who fights because he can't do anything else with his life.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say that. But this is the UFC. You have to address it. So, Kel, I'm glad that you said something. We already had that conversation in Sporting News. Like, when it comes to race, if it's something that you're weary about and think about, maybe or maybe not, we should publish it. Same with the Zone. Hit me up. Don't do shit without my input. And fortunately, Sporting News, same thing. They did a piece on Mike Perry, and in the headline, it addressed that he used a racial slur. So we have to call attention to this shit. But, man, we got to get this guy out the paint. Like, why is he still here? It's not even like he's a top 5 welterweight or top 15. It's not really that good. He's a brawler. Might be fun to watch, but is it really? Is the juice worth the squeeze for Mike Perry? Are you willing to put your company on the line? I guess not. It's not that big of a deal because Dana White really doesn't give a shit, but
at all.
You know, I mean, we got Masvidal running around with his Trump mask on.
Which we know what? That's, again, I can't be a hypocrite. That's fair.
I mean,
he ain't doing shit with it. He ain't being a bigot with it. I mean, it's a racist symbol in my eyes, but regardless, you want to wear a hat? You wear a fucking hat. This is like that times a thousand. Well, like, there's no defending this.
No, not at all. I'm not saying that somebody should tell Masvidal to take off a face mask. It's ironic to wear a face mask that's
a face mask hat. Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, when Trump won't wear
Trump
one.
Trump 2020.
But, yeah. But it's like the UFC won't penalize any egregiously bad behavior done against minorities, right? Like, they kind of let the Colby Covington just said some wild shit, but, you know, whatever, he's playing a character. So I guess that slides to some degree. And he gets
people have said horrible shit about Brazil. Jail Sonny used to say wild shit.
Yeah, it's okay. Like, even the Colby Covington stuff, it was like he got to go to the White House. He kind of, benefited from being that character.
Called Brazilians animals or something, right? Like, when he went down there, like, something that savages, something crazy that wasn't appropriate.
Yeah, I mean, as the UFC needs to step up and just, they have to address it because, look, there are black people that work at the UFC. It's Black Dave, which...
Yeah, shout out to Dave.
You know, there's Lene Breckridge, who's the head of PR, who's, you'll always see her by Dana White when they're doing press conferences and such.
There's Brian.
Yeah, Brian
Smith. Shout out to Brian.
And, you know, they work there. So I don't know, you know, how they may feel about this. And I don't know if it's been brought up, if they're close enough. So I can't say that they're wrong or right. I can't say anything about it. But everybody kind of feels a way about this. And it needs to be addressed. It can't fly anymore. So fuck Mike Perry. And, you know, if he's not getting a fight, cool. But, man, stop promoting this guy like that, man. It's crazy.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Like, I'm glad they at least took the step and said, you know what, we're not offering him a fight.
Yeah, but it's because he punched an old guy. That's my thing. It's not because he said the N-word repeatedly. It's because he punched an old guy. Which, yeah, you should be in trouble for something like that. But the N-word, it's not even addressing the statement. That's what bothers me. Soft touches, man.
Yeah, super soft touches. So, I mean, I don't know. I don't know when that's going to take a turn. I'm pretty sure, like, they're going to be as soft as possible in these situations. Because there's an underbelly. Like, if this shit's the ice cap, 90% is still underwater. Because there's just this underground culture of MMA where this shit is acceptable. And where, to a degree, their fan base, that I'm pretty sure they'll feel they'll be alienating by saying anything, quote-unquote, racist. Like, I've seen these people defend Mike Perry. Like, oh, he's always said this. Someone in a comment yesterday said, oh, he grew up in Florida. This isn't nothing. Like, I don't give a fuck where you grew up. I don't care if you're white, you grew up in Montgomery, Alabama. Like, I don't care. You be white from Africa. I don't care. Like, there's no excuse for it. 2% black. That shit's ridiculous. I hope someone slaps the 2% black out of his dumb ass.
I can't believe that's even a line. Like, for me, like, dog, like, I have, you know, like I said, my grandmother was a full-blooded Italian woman. And that doesn't, you know, and that's a quarter, right? So if I wanted to say, yeah, I'm a quarter Italian, like, sure, cool, I could. 2%? 2%. You know what 2% of a dollar is? 2 cents. Nobody gives a shit about 2 cents. It's not closer to a dollar. It's not even close to a nickel. It's close to nothing. When you're close to nothing, you're nothing. So come on, man, stop it. Because the reality is, you know, if we really want to get deep, everybody's came from Africa in some sort of way. All y'all got something. And anybody remember Boys in the Hood when Trey was in the class? All y'all from Africa. All y'all. And then the one kid was like, not me, you African booty scratcher. That's what, like, white people feel like. It's like everybody's got a little bit of something in them. Everybody's got something in them. That does not mean that you get to use words like racial slurs because you're 2%? Come on, bro. Yeah, ridiculous. We gotta get this guy out of the paint.
Crazy. So before we dive into the hardcore USC stuff, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention, you know, DeSean Jackson, the anti-Semitic comments, all that shit. Also dumb. Also inexcusable. Fuck anyone who stands up for that, by the way. Because I know we didn't devote a ton of time to that on this show. But no, I stand up for that shit too. That's ridiculous. And you know what? Some people aren't smart. And I'll just go out and say that. So, like, I never looked at DeSean Jackson and said, you know what? You're a Pro Bowl wide receiver because you really outthink everyone on that field, sir. Like, no, I understand you run a 4.3 40. But your mind, if it had to run the 40, is probably like a 6 flat. I'm sure I've seen these kids. I played football. I know people going around the clearinghouse and getting padded GPAs because you knew they could only get enough on an SAT, like a 700 on an SAT, and you get 650 for signing your name. They had to get lucky on the other 50 points on that to qualify for colleges. I know people going to colleges and getting tutoring. I had tutoring. Yes, those volunteer tutors, shout out to them, getting a little bit of extra dough as their work study program, they're tutoring, and then they tutor the football team. Yeah, they'll do your work for you. By the way, dirty little secret. So I understand, like, I understand how people get through 3 years of college to go to the NFL. And then they make it 4 because maybe a red shirt and leave with a degree in kinesiology. No disrespect to kinesiologists. I don't know what the fuck you guys are. But still, like, I understand this. So not everyone is smart. That was some dumb shit to say. Steven Jackson's a whole different beast. Steven Jackson, I don't know who's worse at this point, him or Terry Crews, on just the being a dumbass factor and not being able to shut the hell up. It's a plague in our community, Dre. People just can't shut the hell up. How hard is it to say nothing?
When you have Twitter, very difficult. There is no filter.
Steven Jackson about to fuck up the bag.
Yeah, well, it's on him. I mean, Terry Crews is just...
He's still not shut up. There's 3 episodes to go, Dre. He still hasn't shut up.
Like I said, you got to shut up sometimes. And, you know, he went out there and... you could have told me in 2014, after Tlaib Kweli's son Don Lemon and everybody was on Don Lemon about Ferguson, you could have told me in 2014 that we'll fast forward to 2020 and Don Lemon would be sunning Terry Crews in a conversation about race. You couldn't have sold me that idea. I wouldn't have bought it. I'd have been like, get the fuck out of here. Not him. But here we are. Don Lemon is telling Terry Crews that, I mean, and Terry Crews should be ashamed of himself because he was like, what about Chicago? Like, yo, that's the whitest argument ever. What's wrong with you? But, fuck him. DeSean Jackson, yeah, there is no... Like, there will be people like, well, what about DeSean Jackson? Yeah, well, fuck DeSean Jackson for saying that. Was he wrong? Absolutely. Should he be held to the fire for it? Absolutely. There is no justification for what he said. I'm not... And I keep saying this, man. I've said this on numerous shows. Like, Black Lives Matter is not something that says... Black lives should matter more than everybody else's. It should be equal. And when I say equal, that means then if I see something happening to, if the next house is on fire and it happens to be the Jewish house that's on fire, I will be there supporting them. Or if I see my brown brothers, the Latino community, getting crushed by cops, I will stand up for them. That's what it's about, equality when it comes to these things. That's what we're asking for. So when Deshaun Jackson does something like this, fuck him, because that he shouldn't be doing that. How can you ask for people to have your back when you won't have theirs? So, yeah, that, I mean, and then quoting like some hit, like, what is wrong with you? Read the room, dummy. Come on, man. It's nuts.
That's the best thing. What is wrong with you? Like, you quoted Hitler. Like, really? This is the hill you're willing to die on.
Like, this is it. This is, okay. Bit. That of all, like, you couldn't all right. just shut up? No? All right.
No. You want to ride with Hitler, huh? Okay. Let us know how that works out. So, yeah, it's a crazy world, man. Crazy world. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, not much to talk about in boxing, so we're not going to talk about that. When we come back, we're going to hit up UFC because they have two cards before our next show that'll come next Thursday. So we'll talk about UFC 251, make our predictions, and also UFC Fight Island 1, where we'll make our predictions, and that has a title fight as well. So you guys stay tuned. We'll be right back. All right, we'll be back to the show in a second, but first, there's no shortage of action going on at our exclusive partners, betonline.ag. Sports are slowly making their way back, and BetOnline is leading the way with the best odds and lines for all UFC, NASCAR, boxing, and soccer matches. And if you need even more, they have simulated NFL, NBA, and UFC simulations all day, every day, live on their website.
Looking for something else other than sports? BetOnline has hundreds of casino games, poker tournaments, and prop bets to check out. Visit betonline.ag and use promo code BLUEWIRE for a free welcome bonus. That's one word, BLUEWIRE. BetOnline, your online wagering experts.
All right, just that quick, we are back and we're talking UFC. I said before the break that UFC Fight Island 1, or Fight Night 172, had the title fight. That is incorrect. It is next Saturday that has the title fight on the 18th. Figueiredo versus Joseph Benavidez. We shall see if everyone makes weight. Because that's the thing. And is the fourth time the charm for Joseph Benavidez? That's going to be interesting. That we'll talk about next week. So this week's Wednesday card is headlined by Dan Ige and Kelvin Kattar?
Yeah, Kelvin Frankie Kattar.
Kattar, Dan Ige. Frankie Edgar's out of this, I believe.
Yes, because Pedro Munhoz came down with the Rona. Yeah, they couldn't find a suitable replacement, which sucks for Frankie because, you know, he had to get down to weight and now he's got no opponent. Aljamain Sterling jumped on Twitter and was like, I'm heading out there. And then he tweeted later and was like, no, I'm not. So
smart move. So that's when someone has a good manager.
Yeah.
Where they were like, whoa, 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 whoa. Like, you ain't messing this up for us. You better wait. Yeah, so that's smart camp by him. Let's touch on UFC 251. Let's go down. I'm trying to look at the prelims real quick. There's 8 prelim fights on this. These prelims are going to be long. But prelim main event's probably the only one I'm interested in. Ozdemir is back. I don't know what Ozdemir has left. Even at only 30 years old.
Yeah, I mean, he... Look,
Prochaska.
Man,
pronunciation is my thing.
Like, Ozdemir was hot, and then he ran into Cormier, and then he lost 3 in a row. So, I mean, granted, he lost 3 in a row against some tough competition. Dominic Reyes, Anthony Smith, and Daniel Cormier is nothing to sneeze at. But, he's in that, I guess, the Glover Teixeira area right now, where he's like a notch below the top light heavyweights in the division.
2-fight win streak, though. So this will go far.
Yeah, I mean, he should win this fight and, you know, whoop-de-doo. This card has the prelims are loaded. And, I mean, not even loaded. It's just a lot. It's a lot of fights. Hopefully we'll get some good fights out of this, but I could care less. We need to talk about the main card.
Yep, so we open up Amanda Ribas versus Paige VanZant. This is the contract fight for Paige VanZant. She's talked a lot about how she's made more on Instagram than she has fighting in the UFC. Dancing with the Stars made her more, so on and so forth. She can now do that full time because I believe she loses this fight. And the UFC pretty much told her, you want more money for, let's just be honest, like a top fringe top 15 fighter in that flyweight division. Like, you want more money? You want to be paid like a star? All right, come and prove it. Fight someone who's, at least record-wise and performance-wise, legit, and show us that, yeah, you're still the fighter. It looked like you were going to be 3 years ago when you and Rose had one hell of a fight, and she, you know, eked it out, but you showed your toughness and then went in completely opposite directions.
Oh, so the Paige VanZant conversation is always going to be interesting to me because, yeah, the UFC, it felt like the UFC, like her and Sage Northcutt were two fighters the UFC wanted to push. They desperately wanted to push those two. But the problem with Paige is not the problem with some of these other fighters. Paige doesn't win. Paige won her first three UFC fights before she ran into Rose and got choked out in the fifth round in a great fight. But since then, she's 2-3. And she's a fringe top 15. Is she marketable? Sure. She can do all that stuff without the UFC. She made a lot of money on Dancing with the Stars. That's great.
Yep.
But is she a good fighter? No. She's okay.
She's a good fighter. She's not a great fighter.
I mean, dude,
she's not worth being paid like a superstar.
She's okay. This is almost, some people are gonna look at this as a false equivalent, but she's like Mike Perry. Like, you're not a top 15 fighter. You can have good fights. But nobody's expecting you to win a title anytime soon. Nobody sees that. There hasn't been that development as a fighter that we've seen from Paige to say, oh, yeah, she's going to hit her stride. It hasn't happened yet. When it happens, then we can talk about getting her paid more money. But why would anybody pay her more? I mean, it's almost to the point where she's on this main card to open it up. She's main evented fights, but she's a pretty average fighter. So when she talks about, you know, I got paid more with Dancing with the Stars, at least you got that opportunity because the UFC put you in a position to succeed like that. That's the thing. Like Sage Northcutt, you were on main cards as an average-ass fighter. Paige VanZant, you were on main cards as an average fighter. You started off hot, but then you started losing. So the argument about not getting paid, I can't really listen to that from you, Paige. Win some fights. And like you said, Amanda Ribas, probably going to beat you. For Paige's sake, I hope she wins and then goes somewhere like Bellator and gets paid more. But I don't think she is. Because she's a decent fighter. She just isn't a great fighter.
And even then, the platform decreases. So she's like, oh, I make more on Instagram. Yeah, but you know how many pretty blondes there are on Instagram? If you're not the pretty blonde from the UFC, then you're just a pretty blonde.
It's
a whole different competition. Competitive level when you go into Instagram just being an Instagram girl. Yeah, people figure this out all the time.
It's cool, like, you know, like she beat Rachel Ostovich in her last fight. Rachel Ostovich is the same type of fighter. A lot of people like follow her on social media because she's a pretty girl. They deem her as a pretty girl. But is she
she's
good fighter?
She's tough as nails, but she's a decent fighter.
Exactly. Paige is the same way. It's like, yeah, people follow you on social media, but social media is not what gets you paid. You need to win fights. It's part of the equation. Now, guaranteed, if Paige was a world beater and had the social media following that she had, she would be getting paid more.
Yep.
But come on, man. Like I said, this has got to be results-based to a degree. Yes, marketing is always important in sports. That's why Adrian Broner still gets fights. Motherfucker can't win, but there's something that's appealing about him to the general public. The same with Paige. But you can't, like, Paige, you ain't going to get the money. You got to win some fights. You got to beat somebody. And Amanda Ribas is a tough-ass fight. Probably not going to win. So I'm picking Ribas probably by decision.
Yeah, I'm taking Ribas by decision as well. I mean, Ribas is just, she's beat better people recently.
I mean, she beat Mackenzie Dern.
Yeah, and one hell of a fight. I thought Mackenzie Dern looked tough, but Mackenzie Dern couldn't get her to the ground. It was her first fight since having the child. And I thought Mackenzie looked a lot better in her last fight.
She did.
It was probably better because of it. Some fighters just need that one loss. You know, you shake that shit out, you realize you don't have to be unbeatable. You don't have to be, you know, super man or woman the day you step into the UFC. sometimes about getting better. So it's interesting. I like Rebus's style because she knows she can outpoint people when she needs to. I don't think she's a finisher, so Paige should be able to last all three rounds, but I just think their striking's at different levels. So give me Rebus, and Paige maybe goes to Bellator. I think she just tries to do Instagram full-time and then figures out, like, you know what? This shit's not what it was cracked up to be. Like, yeah. The UFC helped me here, not this helped me in the UFC.
Yeah.
But she's 26 years old. I don't know when. Yep. She got plenty of time to learn that lesson.
She may come back to the UFC. She may go elsewhere and do well and come back and get paid. Like, I just, when I hear Paige complaining, I'm like, nah, I don't care. Like, you're not the one that I need to, like, yes, every fighter should complain about fighter pay. You all are getting paid too little. But Paige, you got opportunities because the UFC pushed you.
Yeah. All you had to do was win.
Yeah.
But you couldn't fulfill that aspect of it. And, you know, for the most part recently. Next up, we have, this is where the card just takes off. Jessica Andrade versus Rose Namajunas. And this was just a title fight, what, a year ago?
Almost 2 years ago.
2 years ago? Man, and it was a fight I thought Rose was looking great in. But she held the Kimura lock, I believe, for like a little too long.
No, you're right. Actually, I'm sorry. It was a year ago. It was.
Year ago, right?
It feels like an eternity. 2020 is the longest year ever. Okay, sorry
about that. It really does. I was about to say. No, yeah, because Andrade dropped in her very next fight. And then, you know, now they're both, I mean, they're still 1-2 in the division. Joanna might get a rematch because of how well she did, but that's not a given. So this could be a number one contenders fight. And when you look at it that way, I thought Rose was doing great in that fight until Andrade, you know, picked her up and dropped her on the noggin. And that was the end of it. This not being a 5-round fight, being a 3-round fight, and Rose showing what she did last time, which I think she is the more dominant striker, as long as she doesn't get caught by Andrade and slept or slammed on her head, which I doubt happens 2 times in a row, I think Rose Namajunas should win this fight.
Yeah,
and I'm going to pick her. I'm going to pick her to win.
Yeah, I think the same. I mean, Rose looked excellent against Andrade in that fight until Andrade got her hands on her. And Jessica Andrade has always been a fighter who is strong as hell, but she's got, like, little arms and, you know, she doesn't have a great reach advantage. I mean, without the reach advantage, she's not terribly fast. Like, she has to get her hands on you. And when she fought Joanna and Jacek, Joanna just kind of pieced her up from the outside for 5 rounds. Andrade is tough as nails, but Rose just can't make the mistake of hanging on a limb again and getting slammed into oblivion. As long as she doesn't do that, as long as she uses her movement, circles the cage, strikes from a distance, she can outpoint her. She can outpoint her. Now, Weili Zhang was on just a whole other plateau when it came to fighting Andrade, where she just bum-rushed her ass. I wouldn't, you know, if I'm Pat Barry and the rest of that team, I'm like, nah, you don't need to do that, Rose. Because Zhang's just, she's a monster, too. Rose is very, she's a small strawweight. She's slim. She's not, like, powerful like that. She can strike, but you don't want to get in the clinch game with Andrade. So, yeah, I'm picking Namajunas to outpoint her over the course of 3 rounds. And probably get a fight with Zhang. I mean, strawweight is a very fun division. Because there's 3 people that all could compete for the title right now. So, I'm here for it. I'm just picking Rose.
No, I perfectly said I think Rose comes out of this. If Andrade does pull off the win, which, like you said, could easily happen. There's so many, you know, there's kind of that fatal four at the top of that division. Tatiana Suarez, when she gets healthy, I think makes some noise again as well. But if Andrade wins this fight, I wouldn't be surprised to see Rose retire.
I don't know.
Rose has had a tough time since the Conor Dolly through the window incident and then, you know, just taking time off and just disappearing for a while. And it seems like being champion and the attention that caused kind of weighed on her. I can see possibly her and Pat Barry, their connection obviously has been strong for a long time. But then you ask yourself, like, when is it time for a woman to have a family? You know, she's 28. Pat Barry's much older than that. Does he want kids? You know, how old do you want to be when you have kids? Like, these things crop up. Is it worth it if you're not fighting for the title, if you're not the best? I feel like she has a lot going on in her head, and she's alluded to such, not in a bad way. It's just she's a deep thinker. She has some of these, like, anxiety problems that she's fighting to overcome. But I think if she loses this, I wouldn't be surprised to see her walk away. Not that I'm saying forever, but it seems like this might be the perfect storm of situation if she was to lose, to say, you know what, I think this is it for me right now.
Yeah, see, I don't know. Like, the family aspect is not something I'm really thinking about, win or lose, because you still got to make a living. And Rose needs to make a living.
How much is she making? Like, that's the key. Like, how much money are you living behind as well?
Yeah, right? I mean, like, not enough. I mean, I can guarantee you that. Like, for to not fight.
She should be making more. Like, you talk about Paige VanZant should be, like, Rose should be making more.
Yeah, I mean, I've said this a billion times. Rose should have been the push to the moon like Paige was, but she wasn't. So in Rose's case, the one thing that, you know, I will agree on is that she has been battling mental health issues for years. She's talked about her childhood when she was on The Ultimate Fighter. If you've seen interviews with her, you can tell, like, she's very on and off. She's hot and cold. So the mental aspect could be a lot for her to lose another fight. But I don't know, like, the family thing, like, that would just be a byproduct of her not fighting. That wouldn't be something that I think she stops fighting to start a family.
Like, that makes sense. I mean, just that there's other things out there for her at this point. Not that that'd be the determining factor. The loss, and I think, and it weighing on her would be the determining factor.
Well, the one thing that's just not out there.
The situation.
The one thing that's not out there is money. So if she's got to continue to fight for money, that's, you know, that's something else.
Put you in a pickle. Yeah. That's very true. Next fight. We have Petra Jan versus Jose Aldo for the bantamweight title. Jose Aldo, who is 2-3 in his last five fights, and I believe he is 3-6 in his last nine, starting from right before that Conor fight. So if Conor fight is fight number one, he is 3-6.
I mean, we could just say he's 2-4 in his last six, and that even sounds worse than that.
2-4 in his last six, yeah. So, but he's getting a title shot on a 2-fight losing streak.
Hey, rankings, who gives a shit?
Hey, you're on the committee. You tell me. So, yeah, they're going at it. I don't want to be influenced by Aljamain Sterling, but I can see when he says Petr Yan's competition level hasn't been crazy. The resume is not stupid deep, you know, to get to this point. What'd he beat? Uriah Faber last?
Mm-hmm.
So he's a great athlete, a great fighter. Do you need to be wildly proven if you're that good? I guess not. But John Dodson, Jimmy Rivera, Uriah Faber, good names. I can't... All those three in a year, good enough names to earn a title shot. Or at least better than Jose Aldo's resume. So, given all of that, I think Jan wins this fight. I don't know who Jose Aldo is. The only thing I know about him is that he's 2-4 in his last six.
Yeah, to be honest, this should be for the interim title. Because the title should already be held by somebody, either Aljo or somebody else, anybody else. Like, when you really look at this, like, when you look at this right now, this division, and you see what Cody Garbrandt just did, right? Yeah, Dominic Cruz, he lost. But you see what Garbrandt just did. You see O'Malley's on the come up. Aljo, what he just did. And then you go, well, the title fight's between a guy who is 2-4, who has not won a fight in the division, and another guy whose best win is I guess, against Jimmy Rivera, I guess?
Dodson?
But the problem with Jimmy Rivera, like Yan beating Jimmy Rivera, is do you know who Jimmy Rivera lost to before he lost to Yan? I'll give you one guess.
Is it Aljo?
Yes. Aljamain Sterling is the person who beat him. So the person who should be fighting for the title, if it's like, it shouldn't be Aldo, right?
No.
Where the hell is Marlon Moraes in this conversation?
Who beat Jose Aldo? Whatever you may feel about that.
Like, he beat Jose Aldo. Yes, it was a very close fight. A lot of people thought Jose Aldo won. But who cares? That's what records are for. Marlon Moraes won. Marlon Moraes should be fighting Yan. That's what should be happening.
Yeah, Murray should be pissed. Like, that's what should be happening. And he beat Aljo.
He head kicked him to hell.
Yeah, kneed the shit out of him.
So the only person that Murray has lost to is Henry Cejudo, who is no longer here. So how the hell is a guy who is 0-1 as a bantamweight, is 2-4 in his last six, got stopped in two fights at featherweight, is getting a title opportunity, and against a guy, Yan, who beat Jimmy Rivera, who just lost. This is like the Tony Ferguson thing, who just lost to Aljo the fight before that. And then he beats Uriah Faber? That gets you a title opportunity in this division?
Yeah, I don't know.
I got more of an argument for Cody Garbrandt getting the title shot than Aldo. But...
Oh, yeah, yeah, definitely.
This division is an absolute
mess. I mean, he's won a fight in this division. How about you just start there?
I'm just saying. So I'm picking Yan to win, but I can't even recognize him as the real champion. And I think Yan is really good. Here's my thing. I think Yan should have had a tougher fight because Aldo's not even the fight. To get the title, Yan should be fighting Sterling, Garbrandt, Moraes. Like, he should fight any of them.
I'd throw in Yair Rodriguez if I had to.
Just anybody.
Over Jose Aldo.
Anybody. Anybody but Jose Aldo. And I think I need Yan to prove himself, and this ain't going to prove anything. So if people want to call him a paper champion, I think it's fair because he hasn't really beat anybody.
Yep.
So, yeah, I'm picking Yan to win.
He can't beat them.
Yeah, like, you know what would be, throw this whole thing into complete disarray? If Jose Aldo
win it?
Not only wins, but decimates Yan. The whole division would be a mess. It'd be a mess.
Aldo's only 33. He's a weathered 33.
Oh, he's been here for a long time.
No, one thing I want to point out is Usman flew to Fight Island. He did not do so alone. In his group was Triple C, Henry Cejudo, sporting his robe and UFC title. It would not surprise me if Henry Cejudo was there to see how this shakes out.
Yeah.
If Jose Aldo was to win, I think that gives him the incentive he wants and the paycheck he wants.
I don't know.
And I think he's there to watch two fights. We're just getting started on this. So I think he's there to keep his eye on this fight and the winner of Volkanovski Holloway.
Well, let's talk about it.
We're getting to... So, Volkanovski versus Max Holloway, the rematch. In terms of Henry Cejudo, I think if Volkanovski wins, Cejudo sees an opportunity where, in that division, there's not necessarily a clear-cut number two. And I think Cejudo sees an opportunity to do something no one has ever done, and that's a three-division UFC champion.
Yeah. Perhaps. Okay, first of all, I'm picking Volkanovski to win this fight.
I'm picking Max Holloway.
This is a toss-up. But I think Volkanovski looks so good beating Max the first time. And Volkanovski trains with the same coach as Israel Adesanya. And I think he's been really prepared. Now, I was a little concerned when Max Holloway said he's been Zoom training for this fight.
Yeah, that's not great.
It's not great. So I was surprised at how well Volkanovski handled Holloway in the last fight. And it was the leg kicks that really sealed the deal for Volkanovski. Volkanovski has really long arms for this division as well. And Max is a volume guy, but Max is now also on a two-fight skid, which kind of concerns me because the momentum's not on his side. And I know how bad he wants this, but I look at Max as this is kind of a worst-case scenario for Max. He's... two-fight losing streak, fighting the guy who beat him, even though Max thought it was competitive, and it was competitive, but Volkanovski won. It wasn't, like, controversial.
No.
If you're Max, I would really want a full camp with my training partners, not on Zoom, for this kind of a rematch. Because you lose three in a row, I don't know where you go from here. You start looking like Jose Aldo.
Yeah, very young, Jose. Max is only 28, which is crazy. No, you're completely right, but the reason I'm picking Max Holloway is you kind of touched on it. Before his fight with Volkanovski last time, he decided to go up and challenge for that title, the interim title, against Dustin Poirier. Even going up 10 pounds and fighting at that weight class and having to come back down is tough. Super tough. So him making the trudge back down to his weight class to defend the title against the number one contender, the true number one contender at that time, that is a tough ask. Now his body is back to his normal weight, back to this weight division. He's gotten healthy. Because remember, he got pieced up against Poirier. That was a fight where he took a lot of damage. To come down and be in another slugfest, he was able to recoup. The training partners thing, it doesn't sound great. But it's not like he ever really left his island. He's been training in Hawaii the whole time. I'm not sure the validity of his training partners anyway. So it's not like he was at one of these mega gyms where you're fighting champions every day. It's like his training partners were cool. A lot of it's self-driven and him being wildly talented. So I don't think he loses much from that. They've game planned for this opponent again. It's not like he's fighting someone different. It's the same game plan with minor tweaks that you had the last time. Oh, by the way, check some kicks. Use this angle instead of that angle. So it's just tweaks in the game plan. He got enough sparring against people who showed him, you know, different looks of Volkanovski last time. So I'm okay with this circumstance with him going into it. If it was a different opponent he had never fought before, he had never had a camp for, I'd be more worried. He's had a camp for Volkanovski. It hasn't been right now immediate, but he's gone through an entire camp preparing for this man. So he has that experience. And I thought the first fight was a clear win for Volkanovski, but I think there's aspects where Max wasn't 100% Max. He wasn't at his 100% because he went up in weight and came back down. So I think this time we see 100% Max Holloway. I think he ekes it out 3-2.
The other thing I want to point out is, you know, you said Max saw Volkanovski, but Volkanovski saw Max, right? Like, that's the other thing here. It's like when you beat somebody once and you see him again, it's like, well, it's not like Max is really going to fight that much different. Like, let's be honest. Like, Max is a very straightforward volume guy with tremendous cardio and an excellent striker. Volkanovski is lost one fight in his MMA career.
Yep.
And that was like way before
first or second fight.
It was like,
yeah, like something crazy.
So, you know, he beat Aldo. He destroyed Chad Mendes. It was the moment I was like, oh, shit, he's for real. I don't think he'll stop Max, but I think this will be, I don't want to say it'll be easier. I just can't see Max doing enough to improve. I could be totally wrong because I just don't like the environment Max is training in. But it still should be a great fight. This probably will end up being fight of the night.
Fight of the night. I'll agree. I mean, it's been weird. These undercard fights have been better than they really should have been over the past month. And some shit has just been stealing shows. But I think a lot of that was a product of being in the Apex and that tiny cage.
Yeah.
So now we're back to like a full-fledged cage in a makeshift bubble arena. Before we go on to the main event, I wasn't sure who you were going to say this affects, but we touched on this earlier. It's 116 degrees every day. I know they're fighting at 6 a.m., so maybe it's a little, maybe it's 105. But that has to come into play. Even if you built a bubble, it's still hot as hell.
Yeah. It's like 60% humidity as well.
Yeah, that's wild. It's not even like the Vegas dry heat.
No.
When it's 115. You also have humidity. You went out that way for the AJ fight.
Yeah. And it was,
and that wasn't even the dead of summer.
It was December. And it was, and I was like, I can go out in shorts. It was December. It is the dead middle of the summer and these fights are happening. So yeah. I mean, I said it
earlier. Who do you think's at the biggest disadvantage?
Jorge Masvidal, by far. Hmm. By far. Let's talk about it. Main event, Masvidal versus Usman. Welterweight titles on the line. Not the BMF title, unfortunately, but because it's not a real title. And Masvidal is taking the fight on 6 days' notice. Had to cut 20 pounds, travel, and he's fighting Usman. Now, Usman is like a minus 225 favorite. So if I'm a betting man, I'm not betting on Usman just because the value's not there. But my issue with this fight, and when I talk about the heat and how it's going to bother Masvidal the most, is because of two things. It's cutting 20 pounds in less than a week. I don't care what anybody says. That shit ain't easy. It's not. Here's the other thing. Masvidal's only gone 5 rounds twice in his career. And he lost both times.
Hmm.
He hasn't gone 5 rounds since losing to Benson Henderson. Remember that guy? Benson Henderson.
Like, where did he fight Benson?
UFC, like 6 years ago.
Okay.
He lost a unanimous decision to Benson Henderson. I'm going to pull it up here. It was at November 20th, 2015 on UFC Fight Night. It wasn't even for the title.
Wow, okay.
So he hasn't gone five. He's gone 5 rounds twice in his career. Twice and lost them both. The other one was to Gilbert Melendez in Strike Force. So you're getting off a plane, losing 20 pounds, and then you're fighting somebody like Kamaru Usman, whose game plan is absolutely to wear your ass down with wrestling. Absolutely. If Usman makes a mistake and strikes with him, he'll lose. But if Usman gets this fight to the mat early and ragdolls Masvidal, because, I mean, let's also be clear, Usman's a very big 170.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
He, like, Masvidal came up from lightweight to welterweight. Usman's a very big and fit 170. Usman doesn't really get tired. He's also undefeated in the UFC. So you mean to tell me, if Usman can prevent himself from getting clipped, which is, it's hard, like I said, if he makes a mistake and dives in for it, like, he can get his snot box rocked very early. But if he doesn't, and we go 25 minutes in 100-degree weather with 60% humidity against a guy who is cutting 20 pounds in less than a week, which is clearly going to affect his cardio, I can't see a path for Masvidal winning unless he wins this fight in the first two rounds. I don't see any way he can do it. People love Masvidal, but this ain't it. I'm glad he took the fight. It's a big fight, but there's so many things working against Masvidal here. So many things.
Oh, it's beyond improbable, but stops just shy of impossible. So, I agree. I think everything, even all things considered, and you go full camp, both healthy, everyone's at the top of their game, I still think Usman beats him handedly. And it's hard to say that, but it's not, I guess. It's not hard to say. I think Usman's a better fighter. I think Masvidal has had a good year. Before then, he was on a 2-fight losing streak. He's always been up and down. He's, you know, always lost these close split decisions. I don't see why he wouldn't lose one to a guy like Usman, who is drastically better as a wrestler. And if we're talking striking, Masvidal is a really good striker. To me, he's not even great. Stephen Wonderboy Thompson showed that he's not a great striker. When he's in the ring against great strikers, like elite strikers, he's not one of them. His best quality is that he's tough. So I think Usman's just the better fighter. So I'm picking Usman to win.
Yeah, it's, man, it's a weird fight because Masvidal could very well be on that Robbie Lawler run where he's just unstoppable. He could be. The thing is that, you know, yeah, you beat Nate Diaz, but come on, it's Nate Diaz. Like, I keep having to say this to people. It's like, yeah, you love Nate Diaz, but let's be honest. Like, Nate Diaz is not that good. You beat Ben Askren, who Ben Askren nearly got his killed by Robbie Lawler. But you knocked him out in 6 seconds. Can't take nothing away from that. 5 seconds. Flying knee. Mm. And you knocked out Darren Till, which is incredibly impressive. All three were great wins. But he's had this really uneven career. And the issue is this wrestling. And this, the weather, like, everything's working against him in this fight. If he wins, it'll be an amazing story for Masvidal. Because the guy has fought, had, what, 48 professional fights? 48?
Yeah, something really crazy.
And if he wins the title now, amazing. And it's not far-fetched, because as long as you have that striking, you have a chance to win. And Usman, and I think there's a couple other things that's working here. When Masvidal took this fight, and when I talked to Masvidal in December, when I talked to Masvidal in, where else did I talk to him? I talked to him in January, I talked to him in February, and I talked to Usman in January, and I think I talked to him in March. There's something that kind of keeps sticking out to me about Masvidal, and now that he takes the fight, I see it even more. I don't think Masvidal respects Usman at all. In this weird, like, when the fight came, 6 days notice, I don't really have to prepare for this guy. He's not that good. And I think that's how Masvidal is really thinking. And I think he looked at the Covington fight when those two were striking with each other, and that's when Usman was like, I'll kill this guy. But I don't think Usman's going to stand there and strike like he did with Colby Covington. I think Usman would be an absolute fool. And if we're talking about this fight next week and Usman gets knocked out, I'll say this. Usman fought like a fool. Because that's the only way he loses this fight. If he comes out there just throwing those wide strikes, Masvidal will pick him apart. But he's a better fighter than that. He's a much better fighter than that. So, yeah, the story here is everybody would love to see Masvidal win. And there's, like, a lot riding on Masvidal winning this fight for a lot of people that I can't even talk about until Saturday. Because I'm under, like, an embargo because there's some information coming out. But he can't. They don't want him to lose, but I think he's going to lose. And then when he does lose, if that happens and Usman beats Masvidal, and that means he has now beat Colby Covington, Tyron Woodley, and now Masvidal. Like, when do we really have to? We're going to have to start talking about Masvidal Usman with a little bit more respect. I feel like he's still like this super underrated champion that nobody really gives credit to.
Yeah, no, I think. Because it's happened such a short period of time in such a short window. But I think, you know, he sustains this for another year, then, yeah, he's going to start putting a lot more respect on his name. I still would love to see him versus Wonderboy. Because that contrast in styles, I think, it is great. And Wonderboy, much like the fits he gave to Tyron Woodley, would present some interesting fits for Usman. So we'll see if he wins, but you know, there's obviously Gilbert Burns still would be there waiting. There's what's old boy from the UK?
Leon Edwards. And Usman's beat Leon Edwards.
Yeah, so Edwards is still working his way back up though. So he'll be waiting for another shot sooner or later. There's some intriguing matchups. If Masvidal was to win in any circumstance, Conor McGregor is next up.
Oh, the division is a mess if Masvidal wins.
Yeah. All those guys I just mentioned who are ranked, might as well fight each other for a paycheck.
Yeah.
Because if Masvidal wins, we'll see Nate Diaz. We'll see Connor.
People who have no business fighting for the title.
Yeah, no. It doesn't even care. Nope. Connor's first. The chance of Connor becoming a three-division champion versus what would then be their second biggest star. So first biggest star, second biggest star. It's too much money to pass up. Even in this climate without fans. And they would hold that off to be the first fight in like December with fans.
Yep.
They would put that shit in Australia where there's like three cases of Corona and break that Rousey record.
Yeah.
So it's, if Masvidal wins, Conor's next. And I'm here for it. Show me all the chaos. Fuck rankings. It is what it is. I'm here for that fight. All right, so you're picking Usman is your official
prediction. Yes, Usman probably by decision, but I could see a path to Usman stopping Masvidal late with some ground pound.
All right, just jumping over real quick to the fight night that happens on Wednesday. Not much going on here. Tim Elliott versus Ryan Benoit should be a pretty good matchup. Just in terms of excitement. That should be pretty cool and give us some excitement in that fight. Women's flyweight match, which we really don't have to talk about. Blah, blah, blah. Okay, strawweight. Carla Esparza versus Marina Rodriguez.
That fight is happening? I thought that fight was taken off this card.
Was it? UFC still has it listed.
Yeah, it's not listed elsewhere.
Okay, well, that might have dropped off too. Frankie Edgar's off. So what are we really talking about? The Nate Vest?
Yeah, the Cater and Danny Ige fight, and there's also Jimmy Rivera versus Cody Stamens on this card as well.
Oh, okay. I like that fight. Give me Jimmy Rivera because he needs it. Right? Like, it's now or never. Like, what happened to the guy who had hands that was just knocking everyone out?
He was on a nice run, and I think his run is over, and I'm picking Cody Stamman. Cody Stamman, he had the Song Yadong draw, the majority draw, and then he got stretched by, guess who? Aljo. Like, he got stretched by that guy.
Stretched out. So, did he get, like, playground full Nelson?
No, it wasn't a full Nelson. It was
the finish wasn't a full Nelson.
Oh, yeah. He got
during that fight. Yes,
there was a Billy Jack.
Aljo had him in that.
Yeah, there was a Billy Jack Haynes full Nelson or a Bobby Lashley for you current guys. And then he stretched him with that, like an inverted like knee bar where he kind of like grabbed the leg and crunched him forward.
Folded him.
It's called the Sulov stretch, which Aljo should just fucking said it's the Sterling stretch or whatever you wanted to say. The funky stretch, whatever. He could have coined that shit himself because I don't think I've ever seen that in the UFC. So, yeah, I'm picking Stamman to win. Rivero's been good, but I think he's backsliding. So, yeah.
Yeah, I picked Rivera out of just sheer desperation. Yeah, the man needs a win.
He definitely needs a win.
And then, yeah, in the main event, Calvin Kattar, Dan Ige. That's tough.
I'm taking Kattar.
Give me Dan.
Here's why I'm taking
Kattar. Dan beat Barboza. I like Barboza. Still, even though, you know, he's kind of dominant. Ige is on a 4-fight win streak.
Yeah,
I'm comfortable with that.
Yeah, my problem is the Barboza fight was super close. It was Barboza's debut at featherweight when he came down. Yep. And Calvin Kattar's only lost recently to Zabit, which he's almost becoming like the Khabib.
He's the boogeyman of that division, yeah.
He lost to Renato Moicano, but like, his striking is so good. This will probably be a barn burner, but I'm picking Calvin Kattar because I just feel like he's got the like, when you watch him fight, you see everything right that can make him extremely dangerous in this division. The Moicano fight is always going to fuck with me because he lost that fight pretty handily. But everything else, he's been on fire. Zabit, I feel like Zabit's probably going to eventually get his hands on that title at some point.
Yeah, he has to show me a little more because his last two fights have been, you know, the Kattar fight and then Jeremy Stephens fight. I felt like he left some on the table, but we'll see. He's still good enough to win.
Yeah, yeah.
So he has to show me a little more.
I'm picking Kattar over EA. I think it'll be a good fight. I think just Kattar's probably a better fighter, but I think it'll be a hell of a fight. Not the Hooker-Poirier level of a fight, because that was ridiculous, but I think it'll be a really fun fight.
No, I agree. So it's cool. UFC is dropping 3 fights in the matter of a week, you know, trying to get their top rank on, or throwing it back to their first 3 fights when Vegas first opened for them. Actually, that was in Jacksonville. When they came back, they did 3 fights in a week, and then now they're doing it on Fight Island. So it's interesting. It's packed. Next week, they have another title fight, which we'll talk about on our next show. And, yeah, man, tons of UFC to talk about every week now that they're on Fight Island. And when we come back on Sunday/Monday, we'll be talking pro wrestling. Plenty to talk about there because AEW, NXT had their final nights of Great American Bash and Fighter Fest exclusively. So that's what they had this week. Plenty to talk about there. We got main roster stuff to touch on as the pay-per-view is coming up. So it's going to be a fun week of recording for us. We want to thank you guys for listening. As always, shout out to the sponsors. Shout out to Blue Wire, the network. Make sure all you guys are staying safe. Make sure your family is safe. Wishing you nothing but the best. Follow us on social media at @CornerPodcast_. Me at Kel Dansby, him at Andreas Hill. Until next week, or actually, until like 3 days from now. We're out.
Peace.
This is Brandon Kelly, the host of Blue Wire's new podcast, Golden Goal.
Messi takes everybody on. Messi has got it!
From Lionel Messi to Marta to Pele, our show takes a deep dive into soccer superstars.
2-0 and he's...
From Zlatan Ibrahimovic's brash confidence with the play to back it up, to Megan Rapinoe's heroic outspokenness and World Cup flair, each episode examines a personality of the world's game. We'll dig into Maradona's Hand of God performance and subsequent downfall, the teenage trio at Dortmund that signaled the next generation of superstars, and that infamous headbutt that slung Zinedine Zidane from glory. Golden Goal, soccer stars and the moments that made them. Premiering this summer on Blue Wire.